We have all heard about the relationship between mindfulness and martial arts. And a lot of us are practitioners of martial arts, and we feel like we kind of half get mindfulness, and people who are into mindfulness or maybe interested in Tai Chi or Qigong. But not many of us really know about the neuroscience of it. I'm talking to Dr. Tamara Russell, who is a neuroscientist and is a practitioner and teacher of different mindfulness approaches. I think and in this period of lockdown, I think it's extremely relevant. So we're going to talk about mindfulness and everything today. So tomorrow, how are you doing?
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a loaded question at the moment, isn't it? How are we doing? And like any good martial artist, I include in the data set for my brain to make an answer on that, like checking in with my body.
Yes.
So today I'm feeling a little bit a number of Zoom calls, feeling the effects in the shoulders, in the neck.
Yes. In the energy
And a little
levels.
bit tiredness around the eyes. So, a little bit of massage, these techniques that we have as martial artists to help us, right, in these moments. But excited to be here and to be sharing, and particularly with you and, the Martial Arts Studies Network, which, has just been kind of chugging along and doing things and exploring this multi-interdisciplinary work, which of course is a favorite of mine, and I
So
think is coming into its own now
well,
more, right? It's coming more into its own. So yeah,
I think that the
so
mindfulness and the Tai Chi and the Qigong and the mindfulness are coming into their own. I mean, I was recently practicing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I put everything else on the back burner. That has now gone for the foreseeable, and I am back big style Tai Chi. I can't do the Qigong. I can't stand and meditate. I find that I'm all over the place, but I'm finding the Tai Chi form, and I'm finding yoga to be extremely helpful to me. Like, no, but I'm not yet psychologically calm enough to do the Qigong. I mean, do you advocate standing Qigong, or is it motion for you?
Well, I mean, you've got so much variety and distinctions, don't you? And like you, I have this sense that the mindfulness world has like touched some of the yoga and the Tai Chi, but haven't necessarily got the full depth of it. And similarly, the Tai Chi and the yoga in various schools, in various traditions, touch the mental training component in ways that often are not superficial, but of course they're not the full depth of jumping into meditation practice. You're in that blending zone. But Tai Chi is a good example, and Qigong is a good example of the specifics being important. So certainly Tai Chi, the slow, gentle, rhythmic movements of the body can bring more a sense of relaxation, a sense of calming, soothing the vagal nerve, rebalancing the systems, getting us a little bit almost into those sleepy states that we would definitely call relaxation rather than meditation. But we've accessed it through moving the body, through being present with the body. We're doing some training of the networks to kind of support that sense of relaxation. And I do recommend to people, if you're getting that sense of really calmness in the body, like I call it the internal selfie, take a pause. Don't just rush to stop the exercise. Really transition mindfully from the one exercise to another, but create even a space there to get a mental snapshot of the mind-body system, because you've done something to soothe, you've done something to rest. And at this time, finding those opportunities, even if they're micro moments, I think are key to our survival, because there's just no let up of like agitation all around us. So this is if you're finding something that gives you that kind of like, oh yeah, okay, this is nice. Lock that down and do it as much as you can.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about you first before we talk about strategies for coping and thriving maybe. So you are both a practicing martial artist. You talk a lot about Shaolin Kung Fu, and I'm assuming there's also the Tai Chi and the Qigong involved in that. But you're also a neuroscientist. I guess the thing that people listening to this and watching this will know the least about is the neuroscience bit. So can you tell me the relationship between martial arts and your neuroscience work?
Yeah. Well, we're looking at the neuroscience of the movement system and the motor system. And there is quite a huge area of psychology called movement sciences, which looks at kind of healthy movement and how we learn movements. Of course, it involves studies of places where there's been problems with movements developing or damage to movements, the more clinical end of the work, including developmental trauma work. But I'm, of course, interested in that intersect between movement and mind. So my work initially was about theory of mind, which is how do we understand other people's intentions, desires, and beliefs, mm-hmm. and the neural systems that are involved in me holding in mind one set of thoughts and beliefs while you hold in mind another set of thoughts and beliefs. I'm dealing with this like big at the moment, but just interpersonally, we call this theory of mind. And what that work looked at was actually the role of movement in helping us determine people's intentions. Okay. So not only is our brain geared to help us move and to help us recognize the movements of others, but inside that is also a layer of social cognition, which includes, is that person coming towards me to attack me or to mate with me or to share something with me? Mm-hmm. Do I need to run away and withdraw? Do I need to go in? What are these fundamental movements that are related to our emotions, to our habits, to our mind states, our beliefs and assumptions? So this for me was the intersect of movement sciences, psychological theory, and then what we can understand from a martial arts lens mm-hmm. about how do we have relational movement, you know, in a fight, I guess, or maybe in healing, if you're talking more Qigong.
So in terms of, I mean, how would that, if we start from something basic like sparring, if we've got the gloves on and we're actually doing some basic kicking and punching type sparring, what would neuroscience or what would your insights from your own studies suggest is going on in that in terms of movement and understanding?
Well, I would be using neuroscience insights to fine tune the training and amplify and accelerate the training. And often I think that's what I'm doing is taking the neuroscience insights and putting them inside the training methodologies. Okay. So, you know, I mean, we love to train with eyes closed as martial artists, you know, or with the mask on, you know, so you're not using the visual system. And, you know, actually, there's a very good brain reason for this, which is we heavily rely on a much tricked visual system to make sense of the world. And, you know, some rough statistics like we only actually process less than 20% of the world, and the brain fills in the rest with what it expects to see. Six layers of visual cortex. Each time the message is passing through, it's getting integrated with other experiences. And, you know, in mindfulness, we talk about see through the eyes of a child, exactly to get around this issue. Can we see it fresh? Or in the martial arts, we say, look, I'm taking away this sense, and I want to feel the push hands, or I want to feel the sparring, or I want to feel the punching of the pad, the making contact with a different set of data mm-hmm. informing my brain's representation. So I'm not so reliant on this tricked visual system. So that might be one example. Okay. Another example I would say is always play with pacing, because we've got a variety of speeds, Tai Chi, Kung Fu, we've got different levels, standing, moving, dynamic, fast, slow. And that's what I think is great about the martial arts, especially if we move between disciplines, mm-hmm. Is that we play with the brain's braking system. Mm-hmm. So this is our capacity to choose and regulate the speed at which we engage with the world, with our thoughts, with the fight, with the partner, with the conversation. Even selecting the speed of the words. And, you know, so for me in a sparring situation or learning a form, you know, speed it up, slow it down, do it fast, do it slow, do it to a samba rhythm, do it to a classical music rhythm, you know, mix up your training modalities, bring in some different affect, do it with kind of like music, do it with, music, but like just play with your brain and work that multi-sensory neuroplasticity in the learning.
Okay.
One more tip, I think, which I often come up against is we know that when you don't want to give the full detail, but you need to give the gist of the movement, it's helpful to give a metaphor. So again, this for me is using your brain's imagination network, your default mode network, to kind of implant an idea of like bird lands on branch. So it's like I've given some words, mm-hmm. and it's landed in your brain. And if you've got particularly a strong imagination, a creative imagination, you work doing imagination creative exercises,
yeah.
when those words land, even just the landing of the words and how much your mind builds it up will feed into the body.
Yes.
And bring a different level of expressiveness around. There is the technical detail, mm-hmm. but it's a martial art.
Yeah.
Right? So then there's the expressiveness around it. And because this is the default mode network, some of the way we get there is we copy our teachers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love that moment when you suddenly, you're in a movement and then you're just like, oh my God, that is not even my body doing that. That is, you know, you're just in the teacher's body doing it somehow, you know, this kind of sensations, or students give these reports, you know. But then we find our own way, and that's the graduation, isn't it, of the arts development on top of the technical.
We met once before at an event. I think it was the launch of the Journal of Embodied Research.
Yeah.
So we're chatting after the talks, and we had a glass of wine on and everything. We were chatting away, and we were talking about speed then. And I was saying, you were telling me that if you do stuff slow, I mean, Tai Chi is traditionally taught slow, but its slowness isn't inherent. It's not necessary, but the way it's taught is slow. And I asked you if that applies to other things, and you said, oh yeah, hell yeah, if you do something correctly and slowly, it really grooves its way into your mind body kind of that neurological groove where you just can do it better. And I came away from that meeting, and I had been doing Eskrima, which is really tight. So you know, in Tai Chi and things, you tend to open up and be more like mm-hmm. buoyant. And the Eskrima is tight, and the punches were like boxing punches, jab, cross, hook, uppercut, and low kicks. And I started every day to spend 5 or 10 minutes doing all of that stuff really slow. And I know this is anecdotal, it has no scientific evidence, what's no basis whatsoever, but I got better faster. My punches were better, my distancing, my timing, my accuracy was all just better. It was great. It was a little tip. Just do it slowly, but do it right with kind of intention. This punch still has to be the way you do it in Tai Chi, where you would do it with, you'd issue force with your intent. So yeah, I just wanted to say, thank you for that. And again, can you explain a little bit more about how that process works?
Oh yeah, well, this is like my favorite topic. So, I mean, the highlights are go slow, see more, okay. Right? Yeah. So if we imagine that it's the goal of the martial artist, let's say, to be flexibly responsive, but with like tight technical precision inside a range of flexible contextual responses that might be determined by fatigue or opponent or duration of fight or lighting or whatever the hell's going on in that moment, right?
Yes.
So you want to have this kind of reproducible body movement that you've got a very tight range of precision understanding, also layered with the flexibility and the gist. So both the narrow focus and the open at the same time. And so you, by going slow and training slowly, as the slower you go, the more frames of observation you open up for your brain to suck up the data of like, what is the parameters of like from here to here to here. And I mean, I'm like right with my mind inside, I'm putting micro pauses, and then I'm like, where does the first sensation of movement arise
mm-hmm.
as I turn? the intention comes from my brain, the execution comes from probably somewhere around the spine, and then there's a flow of sensation that comes after that. So I'm using my mindful capacity there in a moment of really slowing down things, expanding time, adding micro pauses to the movement, whether it's, you know, at first you might just say, okay, break it down into out and in. Okay, now break it out into halfway and halfway and in and in. Just keep de-chunking. So in your brain, what you're doing there is you're basically saying, I've got all these automatic programs that are chunked together, and my brain does it to save time. Oh yeah, punch. Oh yeah, just punch. Okay, there we go. Oh, how many of those can I do? 5,000. Ah! You know, no, that's easy.
Yeah.
What we want to do is break it right down and get out the little bits to fine tune. And usually we can fine tune. There'll be something, and often it may not even be in the arm. It's just you'll be going slow and you'll realize, like, oh, that hip on the other side is doing something. Let me just adjust that foot backwards and then go again. So it's a combination of exploratory as well as deeply focused. And, you know, absolutely, you just get more body awareness, you get more body control, flexibility. And all of that will also stand you in good stead, you know, when you need to be adaptive and flexible as
and
well.
How does that, connect with the concept of mindfulness then, or the field of mindfulness? Because there's alarm bells in my head now that there's an entry point here, isn't there? There's a crossover point.
Well, it's fundamentally awareness of learning. Yeah, you're needing to pay attention in a specific ongoing fashion to the experience that's unfolding. Now, it just so happens that you are creating the experience that's unfolding, which some might say is a different variant of mindfulness, because you're creating sensations and movements for the body to watch and observe, rather than just allowing them to observe. But you can have that distinction in your practice. So what I would say to my students is, okay, now we're going to study the movement with our left brain, which is quite focused, very tight, very time bound. But now we're going to switch to another lens, a more right brain exploration. Maybe there's music, maybe there's faster, slower, maybe there's playfulness, maybe there's get it wrong. Okay, do the punch like five times wrong now. Mm-hmm. You know, different, again, just different ways to explore it. So you could capture that quality that's also really an inherent part of mindfulness, and focused or more broad, engaging, a little bit more busy, but just also focused versus let me see what arises from this movement without expectation. And that's a key part of mindfulness, observing, committed to observing without the need to meddle, change, alter, modify, and see what comes up.
So do you teach different groups of people different things? I mean, do you teach a like, say, martial arts stuff that you might mention the mindfulness of it, and then do you teach mindfulness where you will do martial movements, maybe Tai Chi or Qigong type movements, or how do those two fields connect up for you in practice?
Well, I mean, in practice, they're kind of all merging together in this sort of kind of like psychotherapy kung fu type thing, which is I am using the moving body very much as a tool. I mean, I teach some sort of traditional postures and movements, but I'm not teaching like syllabus or curriculum martial arts at this point. But even the kung fu classes, basically, I'm calling it mindfulness at speed, right? So this is how to work, you know, with controlled peril, with learning sequences, with getting lost, with being confused, with high impact, with blood pumping, but really using it, not necessarily to say you have to learn this certain sequence to come out the end of this class, but what you have learned about is, how am I when I get lost? How am I when I'm feeling judged by others? How is it when I can't do something? What did I learn about myself today? About can I be standing with my heart pounding and just let it pound, without trying to change anything, without trying to, you know, fix anything. Yeah. Oh, great. Thank you.
Well, I'm just sharing the screen now. So we've got, I'm sharing, for people who are listening, there's a couple of websites here that are interested. There's drtamararussell.com, and this is your website, and it's got all sorts of stuff about your teaching and your publications and your CV, training that you offer.
It's needing it's needing a bit of a fix up, so just bear with me please, but you can connect with me through there.
So there's some good stuff there, good resources for both, I guess, martial arts kung fu classes, which are whether they're still possible at this moment. And then the other website is, it's not your website, it's your YouTube channel. Dr. Tamara Russell, and it's you, is that a Tai Chi sword?
That was one of the London competitions from a few years ago, the London Tai Chi competition.
So you've got all sorts of kinds of videos here.
All kinds of things. And some of them are like just quick things. Some of them are practices. Some of them are just more funny, kind of like arts things, tips on managing lockdown down there at the bottom, managing mindfully. Mm-hmm. And then a few more kind of like theoretical pieces, like longer ones, maybe half an hour, which is...
And some talks there as well.
Yeah, more like talks, yeah. And this is really, how are we going to transition to new ways of living and working? I mean, this work was already ongoing and now it's needed more than ever. But you can see, there's a few bits and bobs of Tai Chi. There's sword form from Barbados a couple of years ago.
Excellent. So this is where you are you continuing to put stuff up here? This is ongoing.
Yeah. So I was saying to you earlier, what I'm actually going to do. Somebody advised me to read my own books, so I'm going to do that. I think that's good practice, anyways, because what I think I wrote at the end of this book, Mindfulness in Motion, which is when you get to the end of the book, it's like when you get your black belt. Basically, the instruction is go back to the beginning. You've now just done the basic training, so congratulations, you've now completed the first stage, but actually going back to the beginner's class is what we do with all black belts, right? Not only do they get a real surprise as they revisit the basic exercises from a brand new vantage point, they often find much richness and depth of a result. They also have the chance to train their capacity to really engage with the child's view. Okay. Right, to go back to that child's view, real child's view curiosity coming from black belt, you know. Yeah. It's such fantastic psychological training. But my sense is we need to make it a bit more explicit. And I guess this is what these books try to do, just really nail, like, what is the psychological construct that's being challenged here? Mm-hmm. Why is it then that even without being explicit, people really can get transformed studying the martial arts? But then maybe it's my style, but I want to add a little layer of like, listen, but there's certain themes that are happening, right? Pausing, you're learning about breaking. Intentions, really important. You're learning a lot about intentions in your body, in your mind. Attention, yes, you're getting huge insights about how you pay attention, what's difficult, what's easy, when it gets disrupted. When are you really in the gym? When are you not in the practice? How much are you in your practice? Do you need music? Are you listening to, what are you doing? Attention-wise, how are you bringing this understanding of your attention to your practice, to your gym? And then, habits and compassion. So, I mean, a great story, I'm working with a student in Brazil. He works a lot with karate traditions.
Yeah.
And he just said this beautiful thing, like, I've been training BMT, which is this body and mind training program. It's run in Brazil currently. And I came to it because I was a movement practitioner. I didn't want to sit still. I'm active. But he said, I realize in the karate traditions, it's so much of it is just not kind. It's just not kind.
Okay.
And, I've got these practitioners and it's kind of just like, how many bones have you broken? But like, why? Why? if you've been in a real fight, fine, but also just how can we bring, he really wanted to bring this lens of compassion and kindness like into the training process, which is pretty radical for a Japanese system, it was incredible.
Yeah.
But this is the mixing and the blending, and some of that maybe is the more the masculine, the feminine, the different teaching styles that come from the different traditions. And, certainly, okay, I had it also from a male teacher, but it was just, no injuries training.
Yeah.
As a rule, because if you're injured, you can't train. Now, the other side of that is training through injury. which, you know, is an interesting feature of the martial arts journey, but it's not for the beginners, right? And this is, you know, don't do everything that you see your teacher doing.
This is why I find that Tai Chi is unique for me. Tai Chi is like, it's something that I started doing Tai Chi as part of a kind of martial arts fantasy. Like I had a fantasy construct in my head that it would deliver something superlative if I really committed to it. And it did deliver things, but they weren't really martial things. They were very therapeutic things. So Tai Chi for me is, I often say it's a bit like having a shower. Like if I haven't had a shower for a few days, like I'm desperate for a shower, right? But it's something that helps you to train through injury. So let's say you get injured in another practice. Let's say you've hurt your back lifting something, or you've torn something in jujitsu or whatever.
Yeah.
It's only really in the Tai Chi and the stretches related to it that you can therapeutically, because you can do it so gently.
Yeah.
It's not like, right, I'm going to go back to the gym. It's like, will my arm actually move? Like, am I in pain? Is my knee hurting now? And it makes me think about the status of Tai Chi for me. It is more like, it relates to that expression, you know, you're supposed to listen to your body. Listen to your body. Well, my body lies to me. So if I want to go to the gym and lift weights, my body says, you mustn't go to the gym because you're aching, right? But it's lying to me. So I only listen to my body after I've done the Tai Chi form. Like, am I too tired to exercise? Am I aching? Am I stressed? You do the Tai Chi form and you know exactly where you are. Like, you know how much energy you've got, and you know whether you're stressed, and you know whether you really are injured, or whether your mind's just saying, don't go to the gym, you know, just watch the telly instead. I mean, what do you think? Do you think that's fair?
No, for sure. I mean, I noticed that I'm wanting to kind of delineate like what's mind and what's body. Because actually the body is usually quite honest. It's just, it's filtered through a mind that's extremely tricky. And, you know, so some of that is about learning to cut below or go beneath mental chatter. And a question that I find helpful sometimes is, you know, what's tired? Mind, body, spirit. Okay. You know, is it that the body is tired and is aching? And okay, how much more is in the tank? Is it that the mind is tired?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Or is it just, a lack of spirit? You know, oh, my chi is feeling depleted, you know. What do I need? And this capacity to have flexible responses, I think, is a feature of the martial arts. Like, if I'm feeling good, I train hard. You know, 80% of training should be play, these kinds of statistics that we know from the professional athletes. And this idea of being your own physiotherapist. So this is what I'm saying to many people now, just even on Zoom calls, like, look, you can become your own chiropractor, you can become your own physio by just really doing like 50 shoulder rolls a day and paying attention to what your body is telling your brain, you know, putting the data in with a bit more awareness.
Yeah.
Because it's like a huge resource of data, but you need to keep feeding your brain with it because it's being updated all the time.
Right.
But if you do this, then, you know, your capacity to sense, when am I getting tense? When is there change? It becomes more and more nuanced, your attentional system's capacity to detect change, comfort, discomfort, ease, dis-ease. So then it starts to become this preventative mechanism of body awareness through movement, through slow movement, through massage. So then I'm saying to people, look, don't just use your brain to feel it. Touch it. Get your hands. Get your hands on it. Yeah. You know, get your hands here. Okay, this is data.
Yeah.
You know, it's all data. And martial arts, we know this from massage. We're learning all about the body, not with words or even knowing what the things are, but we know that we have a kind of a knowing.
Yeah.
Of like, bodies are sort of a bit like this. Mine has got its own unique features, but probably my students, like, if he does this with his hand, something similar happens, right? You know, but how do we feel it? And we rely a lot on implicit knowledge. And my take is, let's just go a wee bit wider and get a tiny bit more explicit. So people do say, it's a kung fu class, it's a Tai Chi class with more talking. It's a meditation class with more moving. Okay. You know, so, yeah. It has become this blend. Yeah.
So how do you, as a psychologist and a neuroscientist, how do you relate to the different sets of terminology? So when one starts to learn, say, Chinese martial art or Qigong, there's a lot of talk of things like Qi. There's a lot of Chinese terms translated into English around intention and around, you know. Yeah. So how do you translate them into each other or do you not? Are there some that you just go, well, I'm going to speak this language for now and it's a completely different field, can you across?
I mean, to like totally blend it, I think is a piece of work that will be a lifetime's work for me because to find that one common language and, you know, allowing enough in terms of what you're offering students in a mixed group, you know, who do need it at different levels, in different ways, with different language, with different concepts, you know, meeting that is quite tricky. But what I do encourage is a common set of language around process. Okay. This is like teaching you how to learn. And, you know, I believe that everybody can learn Kung Fu from the inside, from themselves.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you just stay with and mindfully observe, you know, all the movements, and you've got a basic sort of image of a person in front of you, you would find all the moves. You would find all the moves. They would come because they would be the ones that the body is doing with the least effort and the maximum force. And you need to find it, you know. And some people do learn their martial arts in this way.
Okay.
And then they go to the books and they go, oh my God, yes, I'm doing that. Oh, yes. Oh, is it called that? Oh, okay. I didn't know it was called that, you know. I never learned the name. I never saw, you know, I watched the video and then I played with my body.
Yeah. I wonder about that because I think that, I mean, I've had experiences where, for instance, say new people have come along to the Tai Chi class and they're like tango experts and they can just do push hands. And so that's a feel thing. You can work stuff out or you could train with a dummy or a mental concept. But there are some martial arts like that are really, really knowledge based. Like there's a grammar and there's specific forms of knowledge. Like you have to know, you have to have been taught. You won't work it out. I mean, so I mean, I wonder about the need for a teacher or whether there's you need to have a will, or whether you can teach yourself, or maybe you just need the building blocks and then you it's what you do with it yourself. Because definitely when it comes to something like Tai Chi, you teach someone like your hand goes here, that hand goes there, your feet go there, and then you move to here, and then you move to there. And like at that, like you need to do this and then go off. And now you need to make it round. And now you need to make it flow. And you have to do that yourself.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's, you know, I think there's a complicated relationship between someone telling you something and you working something out.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of working it up versus working it back. And, you know, it's to play with both of those, I think, is, you know, optimum.
Yeah.
But people have different learning styles too. And I think that's increasingly, you know, been part of my experience teaching and learning myself.
Yeah.
Is, you know, making some accommodation for different learning styles. It's the same in the meditation world as well. You know, certain students, you would recommend certain types of meditation practice. Others, you would say, don't do that.
Okay.
And I do recommend people do like a Tai Chi, what I call the Tai Chi safari, which is go around to like 4 or 5 different classes and just check them out because they're really different. You know, even just frame, small frame, large frame, traditional, modern, plus then all the teacher dynamics.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, it's like, well, what's the most important thing? The most important thing is that you will go regularly.
Yeah.
So pick whichever one is the one that you're the most likely to go back to. That should be the basis of your decision, really.
The classes are convenient time.
Well, but it's hard, isn't it? And now it's all gone. I mean, it's fascinating what's happening with everything going online, because I hear and see that there are Tai Chi teachers with more students. Because people don't have to get to the venue at, 9 o'clock in Haggerston or wherever it is, somewhere on the other side.
With something like Tai Chi, if you're teaching Tai Chi, and as a teacher, I'm always itching to get to push hands and to get to applications, because that's just, that's where my interest lies. And sometimes, the very first time you put your hand on someone's shoulder to show them push and to show them yield, that's the last time you'll see them. They're happier with the Zoom lessons and the Facebook lessons. They just want to learn the form for themselves. They do not want you to interact physically. So I think things like Tai Chi, we might be entering a new, however brief or however prolonged period of kind of boom for this kind of solo activity again, do you think? I mean, how are you managing as a teacher, what's happening?
Well, I'm in a bit of a moment of pause, weirdly, at the moment. So I'm kind of that's why I'm saying my website's kind of being done up a bit. I mean, I have got my sort of small Sunday crew. Some of them were used to being online anyways, because I've got some students from Brazil and Barbados. So it's not really a public class at the moment. It's just sort of pulling together various people that already know my teaching and are familiar, I've seen them face to face. And I suppose for me, it is a challenge teaching unknown students online in terms of safety. I was on the phone to my insurance today kind of going, is there any, upgrades or any thinking about coverage that might be necessary for doing things online? I said, oh, no, it's all the same. And I was just I'm not quite an industry expert in insurance, but I can imagine that it's totally not the same from an insurance point of view, teaching people that you've never met, who are not standing in front of you, who are at home by themselves, and if you want to do that properly as a teacher, I think there's some interesting opportunities to upgrade your practice in terms of screening participants, understanding a bit more about learning needs, understanding about preferences, just really being clear with people, look, take a few classes, then come and chat to me and tell me how it went. That's going to help me to guide you. But also really recognizing we need to shift what we're teaching. So that for me is an interesting edge, because I love adapting. I love modernizing, taking and mixing and blending. And so you mentioned earlier about stationary Qigong. I've got this small sequence that we developed. We call it the Paulista sequence, because it's one of the sequences I do when I'm doing, Tai Chi live on the streets, Trafalgar Square, large scale outdoor activities, festivals, things like that. And it's just a little four part, you could call it Qigong, you could call it Tai Chi, but up and down, up and open, up and down through the middle, and then the old man strokes his beard. So it's just four very simple movements, and then I've got materials that I share online that people can go to remind themselves. But it's what do people want? They don't really necessarily have the time or the inclination to learn a 24 step, let alone all the way to the beauty of the longer forms, which are amazing, of course, amazing. But can you remember four moves that you can do in your living room that you can start to get a familiarity with, that, actually, if you do stick with them, it becomes a beautiful practice, a very easy to utilize, even in the seating position. So is it Tai Chi? Is it mindful movement? Is it mindfulness? I don't know. But is it healthy movement, gentle movement for well-being that people could do for themselves? That's always the key, is can do for themselves free. You can do it. But, you don't need a teacher to do that. It helps that someone shows you and maybe talks a little bit. Okay, so if you've got heart conditions, just keep it small, or okay, shoulder pain, just okay, open, modify. But again, you don't want to even teach that. You want to say, pay attention to what your body is telling you and respond to it in a kind way. That's what you're training. So if going like that is not kind, then make it smaller. Or if your body wants to stretch, okay, make it bigger.
Yeah.
But the movement is this. So you give a light frame and then you're teaching them to train themselves.
Okay. So you talked a little bit before, I wanted to get back to the science of it. You talked about like stimulating or soothing certain nerves and certain systems and processes. Mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of, how have you researched the, is it not, maybe it's not necessarily your research, maybe it's other people's research that you've tapped into to talk about, well, this movement might ease certain stresses or this might exercise certain systems within the body. I mean, how does that?
Yeah, I mean, for detail on that, you know, go to a Chinese doctor, right? I'm not trained in that.
Yeah.
But the way I describe it to people, because I think some bit of like little bit of education is helpful around the terms and the concepts for sure. Mm-hmm. When people ask about qi. Mm-hmm. I basically say, look, for me, qi is anything that moves.
Okay.
Yeah, and depending what system you're in, it could be different things. But qi is the kind of the movement momentum of a body in movement. Qi is the movement of blood or breath through your body. It's the movement of the mental monkeys of your mind space. It's the movement of your heart sinking or expanding. You know, or energies, emotional energies moving through the body. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can say to people, if you're interested, you know, here is one conception of it, here is another, but it's just kind of what makes me feel alive. You know, well, what is that for you? For me, it's when I can feel my breath, my blood is flowing freely, my thoughts have a certain kind of quality, they're alert, but they're not preoccupying me. And I feel energized. I feel engaged. My eyes are like open a bit. I'm leaning forward slightly. You know, this is a sign of my vitality, but yours might be different.
Mm.
And then also related to that, when I'm talking about Qigong, I go for a very more simple explanation where I say, you know, in the Chinese system, what we do understand is that when we're with illness or well, any kind of illness, actually what's happened is some of that flow of the vital energies, whether it's blood, whether it's breath, whether it's movement, it has become stagnated for some reason. There's a blockage, mm-hmm. all kinds of different blockages. People can give way more details, but just you need to know that there was like a system where things were flowing and something is now not flowing and it's causing a backup. So you can go and get specific detailed knowledge from a practitioner who could tell you like where the actual blocks are, where you need to press and poke or put needles to clear it through. That's one more technical version of it. Another version of it is it's like a hose pipe that has water, but with the kink.
Yeah.
And what we're just doing is we're doing general movements to increase the pressure of the water coming through in the hopes that it might just unclink that hose. Yeah, we just increase a little bit more something moving through the body. Now, some people understand it to be blood. Oh, my circulation is improving with the Tai Chi. I can feel my hands.
Yeah.
Some people say, oh my God, it's a tingling. Oh, I'm tingling. My hands are tingling. I say, great, yes. Maybe it's oxygen. Maybe it's energy. Maybe it's tingling. How is it for you? You know, what's happened? What did you do? Where was it more pronounced? Where was it less pronounced? Was there one movement that your body really got into? You can let them play a bit freestyle. Some people will say, oh, I love this one.
Yeah.
Others will be like, no, I love this one. I just want to stay with this. So you say, pick one that feels nice for you. And now next minute or two, just you're with that one.
Mm.
You just choose whichever one you want to do repetitions.
Do you have I'm guessing the answer to this, but do you have a preference for certain types of movement? I mean, would you prefer the roundness and flowingness of a Tai Chi approach, or would you say if you want to go and punch a punch bag, or if you want to kick a punch bag, is there an actual definite difference in quality of movement that would enable mindfulness, or that would enable a strong mind-body connection? Or is it like, you know, if you need to go for a run or jump on a trampoline, you'll get it from that? Or is that a different world?
Well, I mean, the key thing that comes up is the intentionality. So it's the intention behind the movement and the martial aspect of it. Yeah, it's a, you know, wouldn't call it necessarily a fighting art. I think it's a healing, harming art.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an art that has healing and harming potential. And in the current way that it's taught, there's more bit more of a focus on the harming aspects of it, right? Which is why people want to do actual fights and have actual sparring and real world practice, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
But the healing aspect of it is known, of course, to experienced professional teachers. It is part of the martial arts journey, but it's not brilliantly taught in the West. The healing arts part of it. And if you're holding in mind either of those lenses, then you know you've immediately got another layer of intentionality that impacts on what flows out of the system. So it's not just jumping on a trampoline, or it's not just running around the garden. You've got another layer of purpose behind what you're doing. And then from a brain point of view, that bigger intention is then what tunes the whole system for things like effort, force, pacing, capacity to pull back versus full commit. Yeah, all of those things that are around, is this a real world situation, or am I in a training scenario, or am I just playing?
Okay.
But that's the flexibility, I think, and that's the flexibility that comes from the practice, yeah, which then flows out into other parts, other domains of our life, if we realize it or not. Yeah, we're training our brain to have this flexible responding.
Okay. I was going to just ask, where might people people are interested in any of these questions, where would you direct them if we go? I'll share the screen again. So
perfect.
Which of those books would we be going to for different?
I think for martial artists, you want to go to this one, because I'm using a lot more of the Kung Fu examples and sort of Tai Chi inspired movements. I guess one of the things I recommend is like, you will recognize the moves, but don't get caught in the kind of I know this trap, because I really do suggest go into the neuroscience that's in this book.
Yeah.
Underline the five themes.
That book is really readable. It's certainly not, it's not like you don't have to be a psychologist or an academic of any sort. It's written for a general reader, isn't it?
Yeah. And then this one is the sort of the myth busting, what is mindfulness? And I think where martial artists would find this interesting is when I share a bit this neurocognitive model, you know, what is actually happening in the brain when we're training mindfulness. Those that come from other traditions are able to really look at that model and go, oh my goodness, yes, well, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing that there, but maybe I'm not doing that. So if I did that, does that make my thing mindful? And I'm like, yes, exactly that, right? There's probably one little tweak that you could make that you could then say, okay, I see now why this gardening activity is helping people to regulate their emotions, or why this martial arts class is helping these kids to be better at school.
Yeah,
it just helps people just to make a little bit those links without getting too heavy-handed. But of course, the science is deep if you want to go deeper, and that's partly why I'm on my pause, which is, you know, to really try and bring out that next level of scientific kind of understanding without having people needing to read all the original papers, because it's a bit much. All this scientific, hard scientific papers. It's not lay friendly. You know, it's not. It's specialist. Topic. So I'm trying to find a way to translate some of that for people a bit more, because they are fascinated by it.
So what's next? I know you're on you're in a period of working out what the next stages of every websites and everything will be. But what are your plans for the foreseeable future in terms of maybe publications or videos or?
Well, I'm going to be doing a lot of videos on the YouTube channel. So starting with actually reading my own books. So I'm going to start scheduling that soon, where I'm going to be reading each chapter from each book on my YouTube channel. And then, I mean, basically over the summer, I'm going to be quite quiet and reformatting. There might be a few online things coming out. But again, I'll be announcing things through the YouTube channel. And I'm also moving to a physical space, which I hope once when lockdown restrictions are raised, will be a place where people can come together for martial arts inspired self-development, family camping, something called the Dragon Way to Mental Wealth, which is this kind of blend of psychotherapy with martial arts training. And just to say my homage, I've got Bruce here with me.
There he is.
On my journey. That's just sitting just right behind my laptop in eyesight at all times.
Yeah. What would Bruce do? Probably not the best question to ask.
Well, I mean, these flawed teachers, it's all a big part of this investigation, isn't it? You know, our idols and... Yes. And how they come crashing down sometimes, but that's also, I think, part of the new approach is less idealization, less expectations of perfectionism, and just really co-learning. Because, you know, I'm just full of gratitude always. The students that come to train with me, I mean, every single one is a gift, actually, really a gift. And the responsibility that we have as teachers. And to respond to our students, right? To respond to the needs of now.
Yeah.
And I would love to teach everybody 24-step, but I'd rather have, you know, 30 people in the class than three, in a way, right? If my work is sharing well-being, health, self-reliance, what we can do for ourselves, it's upgrading.
Yeah.
But with honoring the traditions, and I know that the martial arts studies, you know, this is kind of what it was about. What comes from the blend that has unique features but still recognizes lineage?
Definitely. Well, Tamara, Dr. Tamara Russell, it has been an absolute pleasure and really incredibly informative and enjoyable. So thank you very much.
Bye, everybody. Check out the YouTube channel. Bye.